guys. Want to play a game?
No.
Come on.
Again?
You can't be serious.
All right. Well, what do you want to do? Hey, and welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about, well, anything, really. I'm joined today by Devin Decker.
Devin Decker!
And Sean Bissonette.
Hello!
And I suppose I should introduce myself. I am Zach Dyer. You may have heard our voices before on the show, Bored with Friends. B-O-A-R-D. Yeah, I can spell. And this is our inaugural episode of Bored with Friends. B-O-R-E-D. Get it? It's funny, right? Right?
Very funny. It's super funny. It's super clever, in fact.
I thought so.
It's so clever. It goes around to being not clever again before, like, skidding back to clever.
It's like a Moebius strip, right?
Yes. I think it's just Mobius.
Mobius.
I don't think
Moebius.
Moebius.
When you grow up and read books and you don't know how things actually sound, it's really funny. You know, like when I was reading the Harry Potter books and I had no idea how to pronounce Hermione until like book five when she explains it in the book because nobody could pronounce it.
Wait a minute, it's Hermione?
Yeah.
I always thought it was Hermione.
That's what I thought it was when I first read the books too. Really weird. Anyway, Bored with Friends is our new spinoff show. So if anybody has been a listener of Bored with Friends, and if you're not, please go listen to it. Bored with Friends, the show about hobby gaming, we all talk about, you know, board games that we really like. We review them and all that other fun stuff that has to do with board games. We don't get to talk about other things that we like, and that's what this show is all about. Myself, Devin, Sean, maybe some other guests down the road, whatever we're obsessed with at the time, we're going to get to pick a topic. Everybody gets to listen to it, read it, watch it, play it, whatever it is, and then we're going to discuss it on this show, and that's what it's all about. First episode, I get to pick the topic, and finally, of all the topics that I could have chosen, it's the one thing I always try to shoehorn into everything. I get to force these guys to read a comic book about Transformers, of all things. And they were super excited to do it, right, guys?
Right. Yeah.
Are you
still here?
2197.
Not that Transformers.
Yep, that Transformers. I just watched all the... what I did is I read the script for the first three Michael Bay trilogy with Shia LaBeouf in it.
Is that why your eyes were bleeding?
I mean, it's, you'd think it would be difficult to read explosions, but it's not. It just says boom a lot on the page in big block letters.
Oh, so you read the shooting script. I imagine that's probably better.
I mean, really what I did is somebody someone took all the subtitles and then just threw them in a Google
Google document, and then I
read that.
Oh my god, can we take the script and put it into Google Translate and then put it through a whole bunch of languages and then bring it back to English? That's a thing, right?
And see if the context is gone? Absolutely.
Gone. It never had it.
I mean, are you Lady Man 2197 would still be there and it would be great.
No, are you females, bro? And then a bunch of digits.
Are you man, girl, 297?
I like that the number changes. I like girl that man. The number changes.
Find me
so
the
what
spectacles.
Number is it? It's 217,
No, you're
right?
Saying it right. 207
yeah,
is correct.
Lady
so Ladies Man 207. Because that's a movie that I've seen the three times and have... Why is that in my head?
I don't know.
Is that in my head?
Because I talk about it a lot. On Board of Friends. I bring it up constantly. Or at least, I don't know if on the podcast, I know I bring it up to Zach all the time.
Usually,
in
you
real
throw
life.
It in my face. Anyway, we're sort of on topic.
Yeah, we're talking about Transformers.
Wait,
yeah,
there's a
sure.
topic? I thought the whole point of this was that there was no topic.
No, the point of this was to talk about other topics other than board games.
All right, so it's like a win-win. Loss, win-loss.
Kind of, yeah.
50-50.
So my first choice was to bring up the IDW publishing produces the comic book More Than Meets the Eye, which is the latest in their ongoing series. To give a little bit of background on this, IDW Publishing has been putting out the Transformers comics for, I think almost 10 years now. Quite a while. But they recently, semi-recently, they split off their ongoing series into two books. The ongoing series before these books, it's awful, please don't read it. It ended with a huge chaotic event where Galvatron had tried to enslave all the Decepticons, merged them all into one big blob, called it the Decepticod, and Optimus Prime and Megatron kind of teamed up, killed it, and Optimus kind of went missing, and so did Megatron, and then it was split into two books. That's all you really need to know, because the book is awful if you read the whole story. But More Than Meets the Eye is a story of what happens after the war is over. And it follows a crew of mostly Autobots and a lot of unknown ones as they go on a journey to find the ancestors of Cybertron, the Knights of Cybertron. And it's a really cool story that I've been enjoying for several years now, and I wanted to see what the perspective of Devin and Sean would be on this, because Devin is more of a casual fan, not nearly as into the lore as I am, and Sean is more of a, he remembers Transformers, if, and I might be overstepping my bounds by saying this, but I think that's the vibe I got off you, Sean, is you know the basics, right?
Yo, I know that, I know, I, on a serious note, so... the original movie with Unicron, I watched, it's probably been about 15 years since I've seen the movie, but I used to watch the movie a lot. And then I had a couple of random VHS tapes of the original series. And then obviously the first three Michael Bay movies, with Shia LaBeouf in them. But that's my exposure to Transformers outside of the toys. Mm-hmm.
What about you,
me?
Joe? What's your background?
I like the toys.
Yeah.
The toys are really where I get into it. And what I liked most about this series, if I'm not jumping the gun, is that, like, guys that I have figures of suddenly have actual personalities and characteristics instead of the stuff that I have just given them when I'm playing with them in the bath or in the sandbox.
And you're doing this as... a grown-ass man.
As
correct?
A grown-ass man, of course, yes.
Okay, perfect.
In the bath. All right.
In the bath.
Maybe a little bit too much into the what goes on behind the curtains here.
Sea spray is a hovercraft.
Allow us to park the kimono for you really quick.
We use it in the bathtub. I have Nautica. I'm not, what am I? Nautica's flying in space? That doesn't make any sense. I need to play with her in the bathtub.
Well, wait till you get to
line.
Volume 5. Basically...
there are lady Transformers?
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. just to give a little bit of my background, I mean, I've grown up with Transformers. Like, they were my thing as a kid, and I never really quite grew out of them. I still follow the media. I watched Beast Wars. I watched, you know, Robots in Disguise. I watched the Garbage Armada trilogy. Like, all of those shows, like, I watched them. You know, I recorded them, I watched them, I played with the toys, I collected them for a very long time. They were, you know, my thing. Other shows may have filled the gaps, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid, but the Transformers never really went away for me. And the comic books are, for me, an outlet to... They've grown up with me, so these stories are a lot more sophisticated and deeper than you would expect. Like, a casual person... like, this is why I'm interested to hear your opinion, Sean, is because you remember watching the original cartoon and even Transformers the movie, where it was just a slaughter fest. This is a much more involved and deeper story, I feel, than anything that was produced in the 80s or even in the 90s, maybe. So that's what's really fascinating about this. And like Devin pointed out, what I really love about this comic book is that it gives... a spotlight on characters that aren't normally known. You know, like, we were discussing this before we started recording. Sean, you mentioned, like, you didn't quite know everybody's names. You didn't quite know who these characters were. So they're brand new to you. And these are characters who, there were thousands of toys in the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s that never got on a show. And so this is a way to develop and spotlight those characters. I find that very fascinating.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as for the first issue, the Death of Optimus Prime, like, I recognized a lot of the Autobots that were in that, but once it actually got into More Than Meets the Eye proper, and, like, they, I'm sure you'll give a synopsis, a more in-depth thing of the story, but, like, other than Rodimus, Ratchet and Ultra Magnus, I don't think I knew who anybody was.
You didn't know who Bumblebee was? He's in Bumblebee's... your precious Michael Bay trilogy. All
right, I meant
you didn't recognize him because he talks in the book.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him because
and he's an angry little midget man. He's well, that's so angry.
That's because he's a beetle. But no. I meant like who are going on the journey.
Yes, once you like get
there. That's a good characters. Point. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Bumblebee's just like, "Bruh, you shouldn't go. I need you." And then Rodimus is like, "Whatever, bro. You know who else needs me? Everyone else." And then he leaves. And then Bumblebee's like, "Bruh, you'll regret this." And then that's it.
I'm like really disappointed you didn't make a Breakfast Club joke. Like, seriously, you know who else really needs me? Ally Sheedy.
Oh my goodness. No, I was I but yeah, it's definitely because it's like, oh, there are 40 whatever Autobots on, you know, on this ship with us, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, there's 40 something of them. Okay,
there's actually 200.
That's fine.
There's 200 on the ship, but then there's an explosion and they lose some of them.
Yes.
Yeah, and it ends up with like, well, there were 40 something of them that were lost. You're right. Yeah, sorry, but even the ones that fell off the ship and they had to go recover, when they said it was 40 something of them. Once again, surprised. Yeah. There are that many of them.
That list of characters was also great because I'm like, oh, I had that toy. Oh, I had that toy. Oh, that was dead. I'm sad now.
But what I thought was kind of funny is like when those two guys that that died that were like they were Duobots. I like that even Rodimus didn't know which one it was that died because it's like
those two characters are actually made up. There were never Duobots toys. Just. Little errors out there.
Gotcha. Well, no, but still, like the fact that it's like there's so many. I just thought it was a funny little joke because like there are so many. There are just so many of these guys and gals.
They even make a joke later about how. Now we can tell them apart.
Like, yeah, it's like, oh yeah, that one died. Was that one this one or was it that one? Ah, crap! I don't remember which one it was. And I think that was. I thought that was a funny little poke because someone like me reading the book, I'm like, yeah, I really don't know who that is.
Yeah, this volume starts off with the death of Optimus Prime, as Sean mentioned, which is not part of actual More Than Meets the Eye comics. It's actually the bridge that then splits off into the two comics, More Than Meets the Eye and what was originally called Robots in Disguise. Actually, More Than Meets the Eye is technically over now, too. They changed the title to Lost Light, but that's getting ahead of ourselves. So this first issue is all about Optimus wakes up after the events of the ongoing series ending, and he doesn't recognize Cybertron. And he is walking around. He thinks that he's either dead or he's in the past or he's in the future. He doesn't know where he is. And then he finds, you know, the remaining survivors of that cataclysmic event. And he's just surprised because they're trying to get all of these neutrals who had left Cybertron before the war started. They're all coming home. And that's where you meet characters like Metalhawk and Zetka and a few others that are made up. And, you know, some others that weren't but have never had Spotlight before. And those are mostly characters that are in the other book, Robots in Disguise, once this book splits. But it is interesting because you get to see how this occurs. Optimus takes the shattered matrix and he hands the two halves to Bumblebee and Rodimus. And Rodimus decides he's taking the ship and he's going. And he recruits 200 Autobots to go with him on this journey. And it starts out spectacularly with this giant explosion and you think they're dead. Turns out their engines malfunctioned and they're shot off Voyager style into deep space and nobody knows where they are. Yes, I just referenced Star Trek Voyager.
Well, but in Voyager, they were in Deep Space 2, so it's sort of like Deep Space 10. I mean, I know it's off topic, but like...
Deep Space really? Star Trek, we ran out of cool names.
They were sent out to the Delta Quadrant or something? I don't remember.
Voyager was time travel. I feel like every episode of Voyager I've ever watched, they travel through time.
I don't remember at this
it's
point.
It's still space? Oh my god! How great was Enterprise, that theme song?
We're just keeping this theme going of never staying on topic. Fantastic.
Hey, I'm
you're the one who brought up Voyager.
I did it as a small reference, and now we're continuing with Transformers.
You guys are all just talking about Star Trek, and I'm trying to figure out what Rung's alt mode is, because I need to know.
Oh, that's probably a whole mystery in itself in the comics. If you keep reading...
Is he riding a Segway? So nobody knows what his alt mode is?
Nobody knows what Rung turns into. Rung is such an interesting character. He is a psychiatrist who has never gotten a new alt mode. He's never been updated or anything like that. And everybody, the whole joke with the Duobots, this also happens with Rung, where he's just one of those characters that's apparently been there all this time and nobody realized it. Like, nobody remembers his name. Even Red Alert, who has been a patient of his, and he says, "I've been your psychiatrist for like 2 million years. Red Alert didn't recognize him when he saw him. And I guess that's just a self-referential joke to how Rung is a new character. He was never in the original cartoons or comics. James Roberts, the writer of this issue of this series, he created Rung, and he's become extremely popular. But yes, the joke about Rung is that nobody knows what he actually turns into.
I love that.
And it actually becomes a huge thing way, way, way later down in the story. Spoilers. But yeah, this first issue of More Than Meets the Eye, once you get past the death of Optimus Prime, you find out that the Lost Light has been careening through space. There's a hull breach, and a lot of Autobots get sucked out into space. And they crash land on a planet, and they got to go find all the bodies, and hopefully not, you know, find them dead. And it's quite interesting. Oh, and I should also note there is one non-Autobot on the ship, two in fact. We can touch on both these characters, I guess. The first one I want to talk about is Cyclonus, which is interesting. I want to hear Sean's opinion particularly on him, because he had experience with Transformers the movie. But Cyclonus is known as Galvatron's right-hand man in the cartoon series from the 80s. In this series, Cyclonus and Galvatron are separate characters from who they were spawned from, like in the old show. And Cyclonus decides to tag along with this and clings to the ship when it goes off careening into space. And he goes with them on this journey. And they recover his body and, you know, repair him and bring him onto the ship. But the reason he was clinging to the side of the ship is because he had had a huge fight with another character named Whirl right before they were boarding the Lost Light. What did you guys think of that, the dynamic between those two?
Between Whirl and Cyclonus?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I thought the only vibe I had from Whirl was just that, like... Like, I imagined, a malfunctioning security robot where it's just like, identify. And then it's like, oh, you know, I'm Sean. It's like, error, identify. It's like, I'm Sean. And it's like, you, it's like, this is your last chance. And then he just goes crazy and starts murdering. So he's just very fixated on the thing that he's supposed to do, which is kill Decepticons. So I thought he was kind of scary / silly. But that was kind of my opinion of Whirl. And then, like, Cyclonus, I don't know how much of an opinion I have of him. I know that he's just kind of sick of whatever's going on, and it seemed like he was really, really old. Like, he's, Tailgate seemed to recognize him, so that would imply that he's significantly older than a lot of these other guys are.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that that was pretty interesting, because then I assumed that the more we read, like, we find out, like, little backstory stuff. Because Cyclonus is what, in the movie, Starscream turns into, right? I'm not wrong about that, right? Or is that
you are 100% wrong about that.
Okay, I don't remember.
Because Starscream
because the King for, like, 2 seconds, and then Galvatron turns into the cannon and kills him. I'm sorry. I'm super wrong.
There's fan debate about who became Cyclonus, whether it's
either Skywarp or Thundercracker, right?
It's either Skywarp or Bombshell, I believe.
It didn't mean Starscream, because he begins the King, he wears the crown, 14 seconds later he's dead.
One of the Insecticons and one of the Seekers becomes Cyclonus.
Well, I've always believed it was Skywarp.
Most people
and
do.
To transfer into that whole thing, Skywarp was one of my favorites, so when he became Cyclonus in the movie... I loved that. Absolutely loved that. And also, Cyclonus, top 5 greatest Transformer figures that I have ever owned is the Cyclonus that came out like 5 years ago, the Target Master Cyclonus, easily one of my top five Transformer figures. Whirl, easily bottom five worst Transformer figures I've ever handled. So, like, my line was already drawn in the sand as, like, screw you, Whirl. I'm totally on the Cyclonus team. And I like that Cyclonus, he just seems more measured in this. Like, he's thinking. He seems calculating. Sort of how, and it's, ironic's probably the wrong word here, but I can't think of his name, so I'm vamping to try to get there. Shockwave. Cyclonus reminds me of how I always imagined Shockwave was. Maybe it's because they're both purple, but, like, it seems like he's as calculating and as measured and, like, aware of his situation as I always imagined Shockwave was, which is funny to me because Whirl looks sort of like Shockwave with his singular eye, but also I hate the Bayformers and their singular eye transformations. So Whirl has never been a favorite character of mine, ever.
Well, it's interesting because Whirl, the original Whirl toy, it wasn't actually part of any of the toys that made up the Transformers toy line in the 80s. And so he looked drastically different than everybody else, and he did have that singular eye. Like, that was his distinguishing feature, just like Shockwave. And the story in this, it does show James Roberts loves to explain things in his stories. So as you read further into More Than Meets the Eye, you actually learn the origin of why Whirl and Shockwave and other characters, too, have those claw hands and that singular eye instead of a real head. It was actually as a form of punishment and taken away from them. And it's part of the backstory that you learn why Whirl is the way he is. And it's quite interesting. 'Cause Whirl is bat crap crazy, like just absolutely nuts, but there's a reason for it. And when you first meet him in this book, Cyclonus walks in on him desecrating corpses, and he just immediately turns around and says, "What are you doing? Like, you know, haven't you ever heard of knocking?" And he just starts fighting Cyclonus, and he keeps calling him a Decepticon. Everybody keeps calling him a Decepticon, and he keeps saying he's not a Decepticon because he isn't. And it's quite interesting looking at their dynamic and how they develop further on down the issues.
And it seems like that's the thing that's built in from the beginning when you have that interaction. But it's very hard for me to have any feelings towards Whirl through personal bias.
Just picture him with Bender's voice from Futurama and you'll be fine.
Bender? Okay, I can do that.
John DiMaggio. Yes. I can put John DiMaggio there. Who's voicing Cyclonus in this world?
I don't know. I think we should just resurrect Roger C. Carmel.
Oh, I was going to put the Bob's Burger guy. I can't think of his name now. H. John Benjamin. Totally. I'm there. That's my Cyclonus voice from now on.
I can see it if he doesn't act like Archer in Bob's Burgers.
No, he's not. He's not going to act like Archer at all. He's just going to be that voice, monotone voice of like, "I'm not a Decepticon."
I've never been a Decepticon. Yeah, I can see it now. Thanks. I'll never get that on my.
You're welcome.
That sounded more like the brother from Everybody Loves Raymond. But all right.
Who? Oh, Brad Garrett?
Thank you, Brad Garrett, yes.
Fun trivia fact.
I love Bored with Friends with the ORD because I get to, like, use my knowledge.
Fun trivia fact, Brad Garrett played Trypticon on the original Transformers cartoon.
He also voiced Krang in Out of the Shadows.
Yes, excellent.
Did he?
Yeah. It was originally going to be Fred Armisen, but then they made it Brad Garrett.
Anyway.
Okay.
So the other character I really wanted to touch on is Tailgate, which, Sean, you mentioned him before we started recording. Tailgate's another interesting character because he is also from Cyclonus' time, from ancient Cybertron. But there's a whole series, section of panels where you get to see what Tailgate is doing. You don't realize what's happening. I mean, if you read the subtext, it does say, you know, millions of years ago. But he's trying to get across some plateau, and he falls into a hole. And he keeps knocking himself unconscious. And then eventually he gets out, blows a hole in the ground, which stops Whirl from killing Cyclonus, and he lands in front of Chrome Dome and Rewind, and they're just like, oh, we'll take him on the ship, because he says, has the ship launched yet? So they take him on the ship, he gets fixed, and then he finds out that he basically slept for like 4 million years, whatever it was. And it's crazy, because now you get to see the Lost Light from the this world from his perspective, where he never knew about the Autobot Decepticon War. He never knew, you know, what had happened all this time. He keeps referencing things from his time that don't make sense to anybody else except for Cyclonus. And it's quite neat for the readers, because it's almost like the companion aspect of Doctor Who. This is the reader's analog to be part of the story and learn what's going on. So as a new reader, Tailgate is a very important character, I feel, just for that. What did you guys think of him?
Exactly what you just said.
Yeah, more or less. It made it easy to kind of, it made it easier because obviously he was lost, so stuff had to be explained to him. And as somebody who had more or less no idea what was going on, I thought it was helpful to have him there. I also thought that in these, even though he doesn't talk a whole lot, he's just kind of observing most of the time. The moments when he is kind of like figuring out what's going on and forming his own opinions and stuff, I thought that that was some of the best parts of the book. Like, my favorite part of the book was when he was talking, it was when he was talking to Ratchet, right? The thing I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
When he's fixing him up. Yeah, so Ratchet is repairing him, and Ratchet's telling him about, like, Autobots and Decepticons and stuff like that. And then it's either the end of the second or third issue, and it just ends on the note where, like, he, like, finds out what's been going on this entire time he's asleep, and he's like, oh, okay, well, I think I want to be a Decepticon then. Because it's like somebody who has no context for what's been going on at all, and it's just presented just the facts, not like one side's fighting for this, the other side's fighting for that, and he's like, oh, well, I like that one.
Yeah, Cyclonus is the one who tells him this story, because he just gives him, like you said, just the facts. And yeah. So Tailgate just takes in those facts and says, oh, well, I would rather do that, yeah. And he says it right out loud to Ratchet, which is great.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. It was super cool. Like, I really thought that was like a nice moment. But then I'm pretty sure that Volume 1 ends, so I don't know what happens after that.
Well, you have to keep reading.
Well, I know, but I just haven't.
And that's, I don't know. This is, I'm going to use that as my doorway to talking about my big problem with IDW being the publisher of Transformers.
Sure.
And that is that in high school, I had like ideas and desires to write comic books. So I studied them. I read a lot of comic books. And the lesson that seemed to ring true throughout is that your first issue has to end on a cliffhanger. Right? You need to leave the people wanting more so that issue two will sell just as well, if not better, than issue one. Right? You can do a great issue one, but if you wrap the story up, you got nowhere to go. So IDW, they don't... What we just read, the More Than Meets the Eye Volume 1, feels like what a first issue of a comic used to be. Like, it feels like they write a full issue of a comic, and then they chop it up weird ways. And, I mean, like, this one, not as much, because you have so many characters that you're learning and that you're experiencing through. But, like, Tailgate saying, I want to be a Decepticon, is classic issue one cliffhanger.
Yeah, and I can see that.
What has always bothered me about IDW is that they're writing for the trade paperback. They're not writing for the monthly reader. And it's just distracting, and it's not fun to read that way. So I thank you for letting us read an entire volume, because that problem did not really present itself. But then once I got to the end of volume one, and it was Tailgate saying, I think I want to be a Decepticon, I'm like, this is why I don't read IDW books anymore. I mean, that's just a thing. I don't.
I had experienced these issues individually as they came out, and I always wanted more. I mean, even at the end of the first issue, I must have read issue one of More Than Meets the Eye like 1,000 times. Like, I hadn't bought a Transformers comic in years because, like I said before, the ongoing that was going on was abysmal. Like, it was just so unbelievably bad. It was everything wrong with, like, the Michael Bay movies. Like, it focused on humans, it didn't focus on any of the Transformers characters, and nobody was written correctly. It was just wrong. This book was a breath of fresh air for me, and I just kept reading it over and over and over again, and I loved the ending because it was a little bit of a cliffhanger, just like you said, Devin. The actual first issue of More Than Meets the Eye, not Death of Optimus Prime. I mean, it ends with the you hear this garbled radio message from presumably the future. You don't know yet what it is. Trying to contact Cybertron and stop the launch, and they keep mentioning things throughout this, you know, dialogue, like, don't look in the basement, don't go to Delphi, don't go to, you know, don't do this. And it gets all garbled out because they even say self-referentially, like, if I even had to do this, like, obviously it didn't work, so I don't know why I'm sending this message. So it was a really cool cliffhanger. Every single issue for me ended in a way to make me want to keep reading. But this compacted volume of those first few issues, it had to end somewhere. So I didn't feel like this one was written for the trade. And you did say not so much this one. But
right, because there's so much going on, right? And that's the other thing. Like, rarely do I enjoy a comic book that has this many characters. Like, it works. Like, I could never really get into X-Men books as a kid because you had all these members of the team, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really care about these ones. I care about this one. This one, they do a good job building up a character and a personality of everybody there so that whoever is in your panels, you have some interest in. So they do a good job there. But it was legitimately because I was upset. I mean, because the book ends, right? Like, looking at how many pages the entire trade is, it's 145 pages. Issue number 3 ends on page 116. So there's still, like, if you're just looking at that, there's still 30 pages left.
Oh, it's all and sketches, like, and covers. And,
like, yeah, that's it, because it's all the different variant covers and stuff in between each single.
Which is another problem I have with IDW, is that they're all about the collector mentality.
Doesn't every comic company have variant covers for their stuff?
Yeah, but I feel like IDW, like, brings it to the nth degree. And I have had actual conversations with people who read IDW books who are like, thank you, sir, may I please have another? And dump out hundreds of dollars because they want to make sure they have a single issue of every possible cover that was released.
You gotta keep it, gotta keep the doors open somehow. These books aren't expensive.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But it's just something that, like, personally, like, as a kid, I would have done that. Like, when I remember when I was collecting comic books in high school, I have every issue, every cover of Army of Darkness when that came out again. I get it, but, like, as an adult, having lived it and, like, seeing that marketing still happens, that bothers me. But then, like, you end on Tailgate saying, I think I want to be a Decepticon, which is a fantastic cliffhanger, but I'm thinking that there's another issue. It didn't help that Zach was like, please read the first 4 issues of More Than Meets the Eye. They're in volume 1. But, like, to then be at the end and be like, well, there's no more. And I didn't want to read forward because I knew we were recording this episode, so I didn't want to, like, perchance give out any information from something that was not part of the assignment. Does that make sense? I'm sorry.
No, it does make sense. And, you know, I agree with you, but this is my question to you. So it ends with Tailgate saying, I want to be a Decepticon. Did that keep you interested so that you would want to keep reading the book? Because you want to know what happens. No?
Okay. No, not at all. But that's the problem, right? Like, that's a total issue. It's like, that's an issue I have with the issue, is I was so into it when I was reading this, right? Like, I sat down, I started reading it, and, like, there was no taking me away from this first volume. And then it came to that end, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is why I don't read IDW stuff. Like, I'm just not interested. And it's not like I would have to wait the like 4 months to 5 months for the next trade to come out. All it would take is 3 clicks and I could be reading volume number 2. But it's just like, I don't want to get suckered into that again. I've just been hurt by IDW too many times. Ghostbusters, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the things that are Transformers for Devin Decker, in the Zach world, right? I'm trying to make an analogy and I totally butchered it. I'm sorry.
I got it.
Like all of those books that like, I'm like, oh, IDW is doing new Ghostbuster stuff. And I read it and I'm like, wow, this is terrible. This is like not what I was looking forward to at all. And then they do like a self-contained and I'm like, but they're capable of doing it. But all they're worried about is, as Sean said, keeping the doors open. And I get that. I understand that art is not just for the sake of art anymore. A lot of the times it is for monetary gain. But IDW, of all these ones, it really feels like they're capitalizing on nostalgia and they're capitalizing on the way that the market trends have gone in a way that is blatant and really just I can't ignore because of how many times I've been tricked by it.
See, I would argue some of those points because I don't feel like this book in particular, because it focuses on so many no-name characters, I don't think it does capitalize on nostalgia. Because nostalgia would, to me, would mean like, okay, they're going to go after, you know, people who remember Transformers but don't necessarily follow it, like don't necessarily know all the lore and the history and the, all these other characters. You know, Sean read this book, and again, I'm sorry I'm speaking for you, Sean, but you came up to me afterwards and said, yeah, I don't know who any of these people are other than, you know, Rodimus and Bumblebee. You didn't, you know, realize who any of these characters were. So it's not like this book is playing on people who, you know, would look in and go, oh, Bumblebee's on the cover, I'm going to buy this. No, Bumblebee's barely in this book. You know, he's not a main character. Optimus Prime, barely in the book. And he's only in it because of that one transitional issue. These characters are clean slates, essentially. You know, nobody's looking at this book and saying, oh my God, it's Trail Cutter. I can't wait, you know, because, and that's not even his real name. You know, I can't wait to, you know, read about Trail Cutter.
Trail Cutter.
They changed his name, sorry. You know,
what did they change his name to?
They changed it to Trail Cutter. Briefly.
Oh, so who is he in the real world?
Trail Breaker.
In the real world, he's nothing. He's imaginary.
Nobody's saying like, holy crap, Swerve's in this book. Like, I loved Swerve as a kid. Nobody knows who Swerve was. Like, no, you know, these are characters that are clean slates. So this book is, to me, it was a brand new book. It's not like it's, you know, like the Dreamwave comics from years and years ago where, you know, they were focusing on the main core cast, or even the first few Michael Bay movies where they focused on the main core cast. You know, it's not like the new cartoons where Hasbro just cannot get away from Optimus Prime, Megatron, Starscream, and Bumblebee. You know, those are the characters that, you know, people recognize, so they're going to know it's Transformers. But if you throw someone out there who is new or who has never really gotten any limelight, spotlight, they're never going to, you know, you're not going to buy it for that nostalgia.
I guess I'm sitting in a pretty awkward situation with it because I would buy characters and figures just based on liking it. And I mean, he's staring me in the face because I brought up the Meet the Crew page just so I could like have that information ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And the guy who's staring at me, he's pointing at me as he's doing it. It's Skids. And Skids is a character that I bought because his alt mode kind of looks like the car that I drive. And I loved his colors. He was nothing to me. So then I see him in this book, and you're right. He is a blank slate, right? He is a character. I don't know where he stood from there, but he was always a blank slate to me, too. So then,
cool.
Yeah. But then, so seeing him in this book and seeing him get that, like, spotlight, it sort of feels like not pandering to me, but it's just how it ends up. Because he is a guy who, like, he's always been on my shelf. He is on my shelf with Warpath and my Wheelie. Like, those are my three Autobots that I have on display. So, like, it's not intentional that reading this, it seems like it's playing on the feelings I have for him as a toy. But it's just how it happens to shake out. Like, it's just, it's coincidence, really. It's a crime of coincidence that then triggers all of these other issues that I know are mine. I know that they're my own personal homegrown issues with IDW as a publishing company. Like, I was in a comic shop last week, and Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters are doing another crossover. It was a crossover that was a tenuous reason to begin with the first time they did it, but they made bank, and why wouldn't they? They're two huge properties from the 80s. So they're going to do it again. And I don't know. I'm sorry. There's a lot of personal stuff that comes with reading this. And I really enjoyed More Than Meets the Eye Volume 1. But unfortunately, you asked, do I want to keep reading? And it's hard for me to divorce the publishing company from the ways that I feel that they have hurt me in the past.
I can see that. I mean, I feel similarly about the Michael Bay movies because I don't like them overall. And
how do you mean the first one?
I mean, the first one would be the only one that was
okay
in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, they did what it needed to do. The other ones are pretty awful, to put it mildly. For a more colorful version of it, you can go listen to when we reviewed it on the Fan Holes podcast. I got to be on that plug. But basically, I don't have any desire to go see any new Transformers movies because they are so unbelievably disappointing to me as art, as media, as a reference to my childhood, as a, you know, a big screen version of what is one of my favorite indulgences. They are insulting to people, to me, because they are so unbelievably badly made. They are just a cash grab. This, to me, is a love letter to fans because they take characters that fans do know and they turn them into characters that are compelling and interesting to read. Like, I love anytime Swerve speaks because it's so funny to me when that character says something and he just gets better and better, you know, as the series goes on. The dynamic between Whirl and Cyclonus is awesome. I will fully admit that the relationship between, and we haven't even touched on this, between Chrome Dome and Rewind, it touches me. Like, it's so, like, they're so good together, and they're, you know, they're funny, and they're you know, fun to read. And, you know, their story arc as it progresses throughout the books is compelling enough for a lot of people to read it. I mean, there are probably some unbelievably disturbing Tumblr, you know, pages on those two alone because of, you know, fan art and stuff like that. I haven't dived into that. I just like reading these characters. And I feel like the characters in this book are strong enough where, you know, I would recommend it to people to keep reading it. What about you, Sean? You've been kind of quiet about this. So.
Yeah, well, I was letting Devin do his ranty thing. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just didn't know. There was no good point.
Oh, well, it didn't sound that way.
Not at all. No.
At all.
No. So I mean, as far as somebody who doesn't read comics very often, and the times when I do read comics, I do read trades because, you know, the month to month thing. The only time I ever read a comic as it was coming out was the Naruto manga, when it would get released every week, I would read that, and the Shonen Jump one. But that would be the only time I ever read a comic as it was coming out. Otherwise, every other comic I've ever read, I just wait for either it's all done and somebody recommends it to me, so kind of like what we're doing now, or they're trades. So the fact that little... I liked that it ended the whole volume on that cliffhanger, because to me... I know that, like, the monthly comic books, like, it's nice to have every single issue, like, making you want to see the next one, but every volume of the story is telling, like, a small contained story, so it's really up to the end of the volume to make you want to go see the next one. So it's like the season finale of a narratively driven, like, TV show. So, like, oh my god, what's gonna happen next season? Like, what could they possibly do next time? Like, that's the kind of feeling that I would get from a trade ending like that. So I actually liked the way that it ended. I mean, and then overall, like, as somebody who doesn't know any of these characters, like, at all, it made me you know, I liked most of the, I liked everybody for the most part. Like, I liked the dynamic, even though they didn't really talk about it a whole lot, like the dynamic between Rodimus and Ultra Magnus, because Ultra Magnus is, you know, very stern and by the book, like good cop all the time kind of thing. Very, you know, just, you know, the way that he is. And then Rodimus being, you know, being Hot Rod from the movie, just like he's, you know, charismatic and easygoing and like he's going to do what he thinks is best, but he's going to do it the way that he wants to do it. And then the stuff with Cyclonus and Tailgate and then Whirl and all those different things, it was great. And then everybody making fun of Rung constantly. I love that. Because it's just like, what's up with those eyebrows, dude? And it's just like, oh, man, like, come on. Like, and like, how do I not know who you are? And now that I know that it's an inside joke because he was made up for the comics, that makes it even better to me. But I mean, overall, like, I really liked it. Like, I don't know if I'll continue to read it, but I did like what I did read. You know, I thought the first volume was a good introduction to just a good introduction to the, you know, this larger world that they're going to explore with these more minor or unknown or recently made up characters.
Did you feel lost at all? Meaning, and I say this from the perspective of the story, like, this takes place after the war's over. So there's no familiarity of, oh, it's Autobots versus Decepticons. Like, we know exactly where it's black and white. We know where everybody stands. The war's over. So now what is basically the idea behind this book. So did you feel lost at all by that concept?
No, not really. If it wasn't for the death of Optimus Prime issue at the beginning, then I probably would have been lost. But because you kind of had that little introduction into what the world was as of now, I was fine. Like, I didn't see that as an issue. And, I mean, if anything, I thought it was neat because every Transformers property I've ever known anything about has been the war, the war, the war. So the fact that this was, like, what do you do when the war is done? Like, Bumblebee wants to rebuild everything and get everything going again. And then Rodimus doesn't. He wants to find the next thing to do. So I thought that was interesting and cool.
What about you, Devin? Like, what did you think of that aspect of the story?
Again, the war has never really been a huge deal to me. Because the toys, it's just like a way to identify Autobot or Decepticon.
My mic, I'm sorry, guys. I'll be back in 1 second while Devin's explaining that thing. Hold on, I gotta get the dog.
Okay. No, so like as toys, it's like the only thing that Autobot or Decepticon meant to me is that if I was buying a Decepticon, chances are I would like it as a toy. I mean, and that's like a terrible thing to say, but I mean, part of that stems from the fact that the movie from 1986 for a long time was my big entry point into the series. And in that one, the war doesn't really mean anything because they all kind of bandy together to fight Unicron. It's not really Autobots versus Decepticons. It sort of carves forward this new path. Like, you have Cup and you have Hot Rod, and they go to the planet of the Quintessons, and, like, that's who the villain of the piece is for that whole section of the movie. The fact that Unicron is out there and that Galvatron is, like, serving him, that doesn't enter into a huge portion of the film. So, like, my experience with it very rarely has had to do with the war, so it didn't strike me as strange that the war is over in this particular work of fiction.
That's a very interesting perspective from it, because the 1986 movie, I mean, you're absolutely right. The actual war between the Autobots and Decepticons doesn't play that much in it. But right before and right after, you know, in the show, like between season 2 and season 3 and, you know, all that around it, it's all about the war after the movie is over and before it. So it's interesting that you would say, like, that's your perspective. Like, you know, I'm not saying, like, oh, you're not a fan, you didn't watch all that stuff, but like, you're right. It's more fun to watch the 1986 movie than it is the show. I feel, right, the animation's, because the animation's better, the voice acting's better, like, everything's better about it, and it's fun to watch. So to take that as, you know, your memories of Transformers makes it easier for you to, you know, adapt to this because the war didn't take much. That's very interesting.
Well, I mean, you also need to think about, like, going forward with Transformers as something that I experienced in my life. I didn't really get back into it until Beast Wars. Mm. And yes, while you have the Maximals and the Predacons, it doesn't feel like there's no neutrality. There's no neutral party in that. They're on prehistoric Earth, and it's really just the Maximals against the Predacons. It's not like the war for Cybertron that is happening between Autobots and Decepticons. You know that they're like, there's something that's being fought for, like that always kind of enters into the back of your mind. Mm. And the ones that I've always enjoyed, the fiction that I've always liked, really removes that element from it. Like, you think about Beast Wars, it's just these two people stranded on a planet they don't understand, fighting against each other for supremacy of this planet. But there's no, like, there are no robots there who aren't soldiers for one of the causes. Mm. If there are, then I have forgotten it. It has been lost to time for me. And then you get to Beast Machines, and at that point, the evil force, right, has taken over Cybertron. And they are, like, freedom fighters. But pretty much they're fighting against the entire planet. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, and that's something that I'm used to. And then, like, the last real Transformers that I was, like, religiously invested in was Transformers Animated, where, yes, there was the fact that humans were sort of, you know, a casualty of war because the fight had come to Earth. But even though there was the whole Autobot, like, elite forces still on Cybertron, it felt like a war between those who had been cast aside to Earth. And that's the stuff that I remember. Like, the third season when, like, they were off Earth and other things were happening, that's unfortunately the part that, like, does not affect me. So much as, like, there's also stuff in Transformers Animated where you have, like, humans are the villain. And that's interesting to me, too. I know that you don't like the Michael Bay movies, so I think, like, the human element, I don't know how that plays for you, but it works for me in a way where, like, I don't know, the war has never really, I've never even considered the war as a huge part of what Transformers is until you mentioned it, like, 10 minutes ago. Hmm. I guess just because of how I look at it. Like, well, I proudly display a Decepticon symbol in my car. And I've never thought of what that actually means. Is that akin to a Confederate flag? No, because it's fictional characters. But, like, what does it really stand for? Me branding my car a Decepticon.
Well, if you, from a casual fan's perspective, it just means, oh, he likes the bad guys. When you delve deeper into this fiction, this world that James Roberts has, you know, created in this comic book, it means a heck of a lot more, because he does delve into, in further issues, into what it means to be a Decepticon, like how they really came about. It's not just because, hey, we want to be evil, so we're Decepticons. Like, that's an 80s mentality for the show. This book really delves into the politics behind what created the Decepticons and what created all this, you know, these problems and what led to the war. So it's very interesting to keep reading and find out more about this stuff, because you get to learn about, you know, Megatron's real origin, you know, how Optimus Prime became Optimus Prime. You get to learn about, you know, what did these guys do before the war? You know, what were their jobs? You know, what that society was like. Like, what a functionist is, like, your form, like, the whole idea behind a Transformer, like, he takes it, like, they turn into something else, and there's a whole a political party in their society called functionists who, you know, believe that your form dictates your function. If you turn into a bulldozer, you're a construction bot, and you don't get to do anything else. You know, it's fascinating to me, like, that aspect of it, and I like it, and I like to keep reading it because I want to see more of that information come out. I think, to go back to one other thing that you said, that this book was written for the trade, I don't believe that's true either. Because, yes, it ends on a cliffhanger, but so do most of these issues. And really, they just compiled it into one book. I don't think that's a very strong cliffhanger, because if you write for the trade, everything ends with, you know, issue 6. There is no cliffhanger at the end. I think I just contradicted myself there, but whatever. You know, there's a little bit of a cliffhanger to get you to read the next book to find out what's going on with Tailgate, but really, I think this is written issue by issue. I don't think it's written to make you buy the next volume. It was made to get you to buy the next book, you know, monthly. But if you're reading it in a volume form, of course it's going to end that way. It has to. You know, they wanted to end it with the correct story, so it ends with the Spark Eater story, but you get to move on to the next story, you know, just like you would have if you were reading this monthly. I don't think that's a valid argument not to read it. No, not to argue with you, Devin, but
No. And I don't feel that you are arguing with me. I don't feel like you're singling me out or you're attacking me in any way, shape, or form. I mean, like I've said, I mean, the thing that I really want to stress with this is that all of my feelings about IDW come from, like, years and years of reading their books.
Yeah.
Years and years of experience with their particular product and what they put out has made me feel the way that I feel. Because, like, and you know, and you can take it as you will, because there were parts that I really enjoyed once IDW got their hands on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I like that they sort of created an amalgam universe of all of these different types of turtle lore that came before it. And honestly, when it's my episode of Bored with Friends, I believe that Ninja Turtles is what I'm going to make you guys focus on.
Yay.
Because it, I mean, hearing you be as passionate as you are and letting you share that with us through this Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, I really enjoy that. Like, I am seeing a window into your psyche that, like, through years and years of friendship, right? 15 plus years of friendship with you, Zach, that I don't think I've ever truly gotten to look into. And that is excellent to me. But, you know, seeing that truth, seeing so much of you, like, it's hard for me not to also want to expose that part of me that, like, was hurt by these people that mean so much to you.
I don't feel any
loyalty. If that
loyalty
makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I don't feel loyalty to IDW because they put out these books. I feel a little bit of loyalty to James Roberts as a writer because he's the one I feel creates this book. I don't give IDW the credit of making this story and doing these choices. I know there's other people involved besides the writer. There's an editor and there's, you know, the artists and all that other stuff. But it ultimately comes down to he wrote this story and I enjoy it. At least, you know, I enjoy the heck out of Volume 1, and I enjoy a lot of things later on, too. So, it's, I just completely lost my thought, because Sean is texting us, sorry.
Sure. I've been listening the whole time.
No, crazy. Alright. Gotta remember to edit this out. No,
actually,
feel
this is great.
No Keep loyalty to in. IDW. I feel loyalty to the story that's
the
being
writer,
written.
The story.
To a certain point. I mean, way on down the road, yeah, I have some quibbles with choices that he's made. And, you know, there are some very passionate, you know, voices out there. And maybe someday we'll get to talk about that if we continue reading this book. If not, no big deal. The reason I chose this book is because it's such an interesting dynamic compared to what a casual fan would know. And I wanted to see your perspectives on it. And I think you guys responded really well to it overall. So what I would like to do before we wrap this up is, you know, in these issues, I'm going to ask you two questions. The first question I would ask is, what is a standout moment for you? What's your favorite part, I guess? And Devin, how about you start?
Well, unfortunately, I feel like it's not supposed to enter into the conversation, but in The Death of Optimus Prime, when Metalhawk confronts Optimus and says they were both cults about the Autobots and the Decepticons, I loved that. That is the thing that, like, above all else, stood out for me, because I have done a lot of study of religion just in my life. Like, I have looked into various different religions and stuff like that, and seeing these two things that to me are just colors on cardboard when I'm buying a figure, associated with something that I have so much knowledge in, it really kind of like changed that for me. Like, it's the kind of thing where, like, before I read that line, I would not have wondered what message am I sending by having a Decepticon logo on my car. But, like, it is. Like, to them, it's their life, right? Like, going back to what I had to say about Beast Wars, really, there's one side that believes in Optimus Primal, and there's one side that believes in Megatron. And each of them believes that they are infallible and they are the truth. And that's really where the devotion comes from. I mean, like, I'm boiling it down to, like, if they were actually cults. But seeing it through that lens, it really did change the whole thing, and it acts as that nice moment at the end where Tailgate, when, like, confronted with the truth of what it means to be an Autobot and what it means to be a Decepticon, he can objectively say, I think I want to be a Decepticon.
I like that you scene guys? A lot, too. I wouldn't cite it as my favorite, although I love Metalhawk as a character, and I love the way he's treated. Just to give a little bit of history on him, Metalhawk is one of the leaders of the Autobots in the cartoons from a Japanese series called Master Force. He was never in the American cartoon at all. So he was used as this character, you know, which was great to see, because you never saw him before this, ever, in, I believe, in any of the American media. So, or Western media, whatever phrase you want me to use here. But yeah, to have him say that, it's like a breath of fresh air, because he is a outside objector. He's a neutral, and he just looks at that as, you were both wrong. You know, he's a third party saying, no, you two are wrong. That's excellent. I love that.
I also like the usage of the term nail for non-affiliated intelligent life form. I think that's just perfect. And the fact that it never came up in this episode was like, I kept looking for the opportunity to hammer the nail into the conversation.
There's so many cool things.
It just never happened.
Yeah. What about you, Sean? What was a standout moment for you? As someone who was relatively new to this experience, what stood out as a moment for you, like a good favorite part of the book?
Two parts. So the first one was the one that I talked about earlier with Tailgate making the decision that they'd given just the straight facts that he would want to be a Decepticon. I thought that was a really cool scene, and I know I mentioned that earlier in the episode. The other part that I really, really liked was the whole thing with Rung and the Spark Eater, but the Spark Eater was going after him, and then Skids busting in and then taking him down the elevator chute all the way up to Rodimus using him as bait. I thought that was just really, I thought it was funny. I thought that was a really, you know, it took something that made it look like it was going to go for like a horror tone and just, made it just like a fun, silly thing. So those were the two parts that really stuck out to me the most.
Yeah. I like the way Rung is, he's, like I said before, he is a brand new character, and IDW has tried this before in the book. Writers have tried to create their own characters so they can kind of put their own stamp on it. And the first indication of that was actually a character who's in this book who we haven't mentioned is Drift. They hyped the heck out of Drift to the point where fans completely rejected him. You know, nobody wanted anything to do with this character because it was so shoved down your throat. And, you know, over the years since his introduction, you know, people have warmed up to him. And then in this book, he's gone through a very drastic change. And his characterization in this book, I feel, is one of the better characters out there, because he comes off as a like a born again religious nut almost. And he's just embracing everything because he's so desperate to be accepted. And it's quite interesting to see him. But Rung, I feel like, is the same idea. He was a brand new character created by a writer, but he was introduced correctly. He was done in a way that it's a little bit jokey, like on the nose, saying like nobody knows who he is, even though he's been around forever. And then, but he has been around forever, so you got to accept him. But they do it in a fun way, and he's just a really interesting character as he develops. So that's cool. I like that you latched on to somebody new like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, leave it to me to find the joke character and really really get into that and like them. I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
I feel like if you keep reading, you'll see more with Rung that you'll really like.
Yeah, and I may keep reading. I mean, I'm sure that at some point, you know, we're gonna start doing this show. I'm sure it'll come up again. So even if I don't go and seek it out and read it myself, I'm sure that at some point.
Well, next time it's my turn, I get to pick what you guys do. Maybe I'll make you read volume two.
Well, that's
all right. So, new rule before we go forward: you cannot repeat the same form of media two episode types in a row.
You've
got to give the field a chance to go fallow. I know that we probably shouldn't be doing like upkeep in an episode, but I mean that's just something I would like to put out there to the group.
It'll be a great home game for our listeners. You know, how many times can Zach put Transformers into the show?
How many times can Zach get this Transformers thing? I mean, and it could be something else Transformers related. It just don't be another comic book.
Yeah, you want us to read Robots in Disguise, Volume 1? I am there.
I think that it should not be a Transformers comic for a while. But and I don't mean that in because I didn't like it. But it's like, unless you want to turn into a Transformers comic fan cast, I feel like you should branch out a little bit, buddy.
No, I will branch out. I have other interests.
We're like Doctor Who, right?
Exactly. Yeah, board games. Board games and Transformers.
That's all it's all about. I'm very, very... Two notes. That's all I got, folks.
Before Zach gets to go okay and wrap this episode up, brainstorm. Because he's the only member that like is named and is part of the crew that we have not mentioned the whole episode.
The fact that he has the mysterious briefcase handcuffed to his arm.
Oh, it takes like 2 years to get payoff on that, but it's amazing.
Well, like when he's checking in for the ship, and it's like everybody turn in your weapons, and he's just like, "Nah, bro, this is really important. I can't open this case." And then they're just like, "Oh, okay, go on." And I'm like, "Wait, what's in the case? Like, I wouldn't have cared until now."
It's an ongoing joke, and you think that nothing's in it, but there actually is. You got to keep reading. I'm not going to spoil that on this episode.
It's the glue that's gonna stick the Matrix back together, and then Optimus Prime goes Sam, and then Shia LaBeouf's there.
No, so real quick, I think.
Oh, sorry. Hello, sorry about
Doug.
That.
Oh man, what did I eat?
Hot dogs.
So just because, you know, I feel like it, I'm going to bring up one of my favorite moments as well.
You should.
Yeah, I think I should. So the character I mentioned him briefly earlier, Chrome Dome. Chrome Dome has a special place to me just because I actually voiced him in a fan dub. But this version of Chrome Dome is very, very different than what you remember, if you even remember him from the cartoons. He is a mnemosurgeon, which means he dabbles in memory. He can, you know, read people's minds, sort of. He can read their memories, I should say. He doesn't just read their minds. He has to inject into them, and he can see their memories and sift through them and, you know, understand them. And there's a fantastic joke in this book, and it's the kind of joke you can really only do in a comic book, where he has to read the memories of the dead Shock. Or I don't remember which one is which, of the duo bots. He has to read the dead body. And he just says, it's a fantastic line. He goes, after the person dies, the details get a little sketchy. And it's a beautiful visual joke where it's all sketched out with no color. It's very rough when he's seeing this memory. And it's just, I think, is one of the most beautiful panels in this book. Just the way it's done. And I love that moment. And it just shows that Chrome Dome has a very dark sense of humor. Like, he deals with, you know, his issues and his problems with humor, but he does it in a way that just, to me, really, I can relate to, and it's fun. And also, like I said, Rewind has always been one of my favorite characters because I love the cassette robots. And the fact that those two are paired up is gold. They're fantastic. But yeah, that's my moment, that that one panel with the sketchy joke.
Ladies and gentlemen, puns will be part of both Bored with Friends and Bored with Friends.
Yes, they will.
Any Zach Dyer Unlimited property. That's the new name of the network, by the
way.
No,
it is not.
I'm choking on a Reese's Pieces over here. That was hilarious.
So the last question I have for you guys before we wrap this up is, all right, yep. So after reading the first volume, would you continue or would you recommend it to another person to read?
I'll go first. Yes, I would. I would continue to read it. Whether or not, I mean, I might wait until inevitably this comes up again, but I would continue to read it. I liked the story. I liked that I didn't need to really know who the characters were, because by and large they were all new characters, and even the ones that weren't new, like, you could kind of figure it out. So I mean, overall, I did like it. I don't have any hang-ups about any of this stuff, really. So I'd be down to read more of it, and I did very much enjoy it.
And Devin, I think we know your answer from before, but real quick, you know, same question.
Not only would I continue reading it, I am going to read volume 2 tomorrow.
Ah, all right.
That's the thing, because you know what? I'm going to try to rise above all of the hurt that has been caused to me in the past. And see where it goes and see if maybe I am wrong. Maybe I am casting aspersions based on my own experiences. Let's see if I can break the cycle of hate. And I will read volume 2 and I will get back to you. But you also asked if we would recommend it. And honestly, I don't know if I would. If I'm talking to somebody and Transformers comes up, yes, I would recommend it. But like to Bill Friday on the street, probably not. Like, I feel like it is specialized.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of those things where, like, I don't know. Transformers are weird anyway. Like in the same way that Ninja Turtles are weird. That, like, I wouldn't recommend the IDW series to anybody unless they were like, I like Ninja Turtles. I'd be like, well, then you should probably check it out. But if, like, we were talking about, I don't know, bubblegum ice cream, it wouldn't be a natural segue to be like, yeah, you should check out More Than Meets the Eye by Transformers.
See, I have to say, I have recommended this book. I know I've recommended it to you, Devin, to read. I've recommended it to Vanessa to read multiple times. And it's, I think it's daunting to get into because of the history of the show and the franchise. Like, people feel like they need to know more about it in order to read it, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm projecting, but that could be part of it. Or maybe they just don't have a desire to read it because they don't have that much interest in this as much as I do, which is why this whole podcast was fantastic, because I got to force you two to read it and see how great it is. But overall, I have learned that this is not something that I can just, you know, oh yeah, you should go read More Than Meets the Eye. No, you're right, Devin. I think I agree with you. It is, you know, specialized. You need to find pieces of it that they're going to be able to latch onto. Because the reason you read a book isn't because you have your own reasons. The same reason you have your own reasons for watching a movie. The same reason you have your own reasons playing a game. Like, you're attracted to it for something. It may not be the same reasons that I'm attracted to it. You know, I'm attracted to it because I love the concept of using these clean slate characters, these C-listers who no one's ever heard of. Character, that's always something I've attached myself to with TV shows and things. I always like, you know, the B-team. You know, I don't like necessarily the main star. And I want to see more of them used. And this book does that in spades. But that's not the only reason to like it. Plenty of people like it because of, you know, the relationships that are, you know, sewn through the book. Some people like it because of the history that you get to see in it. But it can be a little daunting. So I say I would recommend it, but you got to have some sort of liking of Transformers, I feel, at least to get started.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, respect. I mean, like, you've, as the jumping off point, every time that you've tried to get me to read this, I have bought one of the figures that is like a main character, and you're like, oh, hey, you know what you should read? More Than Meets the Eye.
It's so frustrating that you do that. I mean, you have Nautica, who is not even in this volume, and she is like way down the road, and you have that figure, and you still wouldn't read the book. It blew my mind. Sorry.
No, it's cool. I'm just saying, it's like, but it's your theory in action. Mm-hmm. You're like, it is specialized. And like, yes, as I said, Skids is one of the Autobots that is on display. And Cyclonus is one of the Decepticons. Sorry, I'll have to change that I have on display. If you look at my Transformers that are out. So like, I get why you have tried to get me to read this book so many times.
All right. So that was our first episode of Bored with Friends and our look at the Transformers More Than Meets the Eye Volume 1 comic book from IDW Publishing. I think overall it was a good experience. Would you guys say yes?
I think the book, if you just heard this episode, that is the greatest love of all, is that this actually went out. And I think it should. This was very fun, even though I got, you know, yeah, this was good. I liked this. This was a lot of fun.
And even though I didn't talk for 15 minutes because I was packing for my vacation, I apologize. That's very unprofessional.
To be fair, I talked for 15 minutes that you weren't talking. So it all evens out in the wash.
No, I guess that's fair. That's fair. But it was nice to open up a brand new bottle of podcast and pour three nice glasses and just enjoy it with friends. Rate, comment, and share, please.
Oh, was I supposed to wait to drink that? Because I already downed it in one.
Nah, you're cool. You're cool. Sweet. However you want to enjoy. It's enjoy.
I thought you were proposing a toast. I'm like, oh, the glass is empty.
No. No toast necessary.
I never got my glass.
Oh, I drank that too. All right. Fantastic. All right. Thank you so much for listening. And as you know, Sean just said, give us a like, give us a tweet, give us a recommendation if you enjoyed it. If you have a recommendation for us, maybe we can do that too. Listeners, you know, let us know what you're into just in case we run out of ideas. We have no idea where this show is going to go because it's basically we can talk about whatever the heck we want. And that. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, why not check out some of our other projects on the And All the Nerdy Fun network, like Bored with Friends, B-O-A-R-D, where we review board games and talk about everything hobby game related. Or check out our RPG show, Critical Failure, run by Sean. Critical Failure is a show about people who want to learn how to play an RPG, but have never played one before in their lives. While you're at it, drop us some feedback at boardwithfriends42@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @boardwithfriend. If you have suggestions for the show, hit us up on there too. We'd love to get topics for the Bored with Friends show, things that we haven't tried yet, things that you think we might be interested in. And finally, if you got a moment, why not throw us an iTunes review? Always helpful just to get those stats up there. Anyway, thanks for listening.